Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday. It's March 11th. 30 degrees here in Old Town Park City with some clouds. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Monday to you. As we start off this new week, we're going to kind of follow in a similar theme over this weekend where it was just kind of beautiful and mild, but we did see increasing clouds, definitely a little bit more cloud coverage yesterday compared to what we saw on Saturday. And today we'll bring either partly sunny to mostly cloudy skies across the Wasatch back. Our daytime highs will still range above average. We'll be around 45 degrees in Park City this afternoon, while Heber will have a chance of seeing a daytime high around 50. But the reason why we're seeing the extra clouds and the increased breeze is there's a shortwave trough that's moving in from the west. So just with a little bit more energy, a little bit more moisture, there will be at least a slight chance that we could see a few stray showers out there today. And with the daytime high coming in at 45 degrees in Park City, we could see times of rain and snow if we find wet weather. But if we're putting a percentage on it, looks to be about a 20% chance. So not all that high, but don't be completely surprised if you do find wet weather, especially once we move into this afternoon. As we move into tonight, we get partly cloudy skies, the overnight low falling to 29 degrees in Park City, and then our weather ramps up as we go from our Tuesday into Wednesday. After this weak system brushes by the state today, we'll see a stronger one move in from the Pacific Northwest tomorrow. So the daytime high tomorrow will come in right around 40 degrees. And as we go from tomorrow morning into the afternoon, the chance of wet weather will only be increasing. I think in Park City, we're mainly going to stay snow, but in places like Heber, we could see times of rain and then snow as cooler air will eventually be working its way in. So as we go throughout our Tuesday, we'll be looking at a 90% chance of seeing showers, and we'll hold on to a pretty good chance through our Tuesday night. And with the northwesterly flow taking over going into our Wednesday, we'll hold on to a pretty good chance of seeing snow, better than a 50-50 chance even on our Wednesday. And the temperatures will continue to cool. We'll drop to 25 degrees on Tuesday night, and on Wednesday, we might only see a daytime high coming in around 32. So that daytime high will be right around freezing, a big change of pace compared to what we're going to see out there for today. Snow showers could linger from Wednesday night into first thing on Thursday, but I think throughout the day on Thursday, we'll see gradually clearing conditions as our temperatures will quickly begin to warm back up. On Thursday afternoon, we'll be back in the upper 30s, low 40s on Friday, and then over the weekend, we'll see mostly sunny skies both days, and we actually could see mid to upper 40s in Park City. A little bit of a roller coaster this week. And I also want to mention that between Tuesday and Wednesday in the Wasatch back, we could see a trace to 4 inches for most locations. But if we see the moisture really come together like it could, we could see maybe around half a foot for Park City and maybe more for places like Deer Valley and Park City Mountain. But we'll continue to fine tune the totals just as we get that a little bit closer, Leslie.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Thomas.
You're welcome.
No call yet from the Utah Avalanche Center, but I'll let you know that most terrain does have a low avalanche danger. There are areas of moderate, however. Those do exist for some of the pockety hard slabs of wind-drifted snow found primarily in the upper elevations, and the recommendation is to continue to avoid those overhanging cornices along the ridge lines. Again, if you need more information, you can always go to utahavalanchecenter.org. Stay tuned. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant. Later on, we'll have our athlete report with Park City Ski and Snowboard. We'll be talking with Free Ski Division Director Hatch Haslock, along with Snowboard Division Director Rick Shimpino. Later on, Park City Education Foundation CEO Ingrid Whitley will be joined by Vice President of Advancement Jen Bello with an update on some of the classroom grants they're looking at, and Running with Ed is coming up. Park City leaders now have a completely new concept to consider for the 22 acres of property along State Route 248 there at Richardson Flat Road. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
The Park City Council has a new option for how to develop what is known as the Gorda property, a mixed-use neighborhood with 200 housing units, 1,500 underground parking stalls, a transit hub, along with space for retail, recreation, and childcare. Nestled between PC Hill, State Route 248, and Quinns Junction, the city owns the land that was briefly considered for use as a soil repository. The city is getting $15 million from Deer Valley Resort to build a transportation facility along State Route 248 as part of a deal negotiated for the ski area's snowpark development. The money could be applied to the project, but opinions from council members were mixed Thursday. Ryan Dickey, Jeremy Rubel, and Tana Tolley expressed support for the initial village concept. While Dickey said he'd like to see less market-rate housing, he said it could help make the project financially viable. Tolley stressed the need to get feedback from residents, and Ed Parisian said he'd need that input before deciding how to move forward.
One of the big things I have a problem is this is one of the big entry points to town. A lot of people think that hill is beautiful. I don't want to use this place as an excuse to spend the $15 million from Deer Valley.
Bill Sirocco questioned if the village development would ease traffic on State Route 248.
We should expect at peak time 1,500 cars in there. Those cars are going to arrive between 7 in the morning and 10 in the morning. They're going to leave between 3 and 5 p.m. for the most part. How do we get 1,500 cars out of there across 248 heading back towards Highway 40 without causing issues for cars leaving Park City, coming from the west on 248, for people coming in and out of Park City Heights? So I've got some issues with a large parking capture at that site.
Sirocco expressed interest in a separate concept presented Thursday for a new public works facility on the Gordo property,
where we have housing on site for our needs, for snowplow drivers, for bus drivers, which has been one of our biggest recruiting hurdles.
Former city council candidate John Greenfield, who lives in the Park City Heights neighborhood close to the land, criticized any plan for a parking facility.
The terrifying part for me is the notion that this effort really has not much to do with truly alleviating traffic congestion, which should be its primary purpose. We know where the traffic really comes from, and it's caused by an influx and outflux of workers, not skiers. Positioning the park and ride near the intersection of Highways 40 and 248 would be more beneficial for workers and visitors converging from different directions, as it minimizes the need for them to endure heavy traffic for a mile to get to Gordo.
For now, the city is moving forward with plans to remediate contaminated soil on the Gordo property, which will allow for future development when the council makes a final decision. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the mental health community survey. Is it still ongoing?
No, we wrapped that up in the middle part of February. By all indications, early on, we've had really good success. Our company that we partnered with completed over 800 phone interviews. And are still working through organizing and cleaning the data from the web-based surveys and that on the internet. So what our expectation is that by the end of the month, our behavioral health director, Aaron Newman, will receive the report, at which time we'll begin sitting down with all the councils, the COG, Council of Governments, and then the Board of Health to convey those results of that. And then Aaron will use that to build out the strategic plan for behavioral health in the coming year and begin allocating resources to those efforts.
Yeah, so the phone interviews, is that something new, or have you already always made those calls? Because you do this like every 2 years, right?
Yeah, and the phone interviews are not new to this process. That has been done in the past, and I think that might actually be the most fruitful part of the assessment, is because you get to have that one-on-one, or the company gets to have that one-on-one with individuals and really dive into some of those concerns or the praises that they share regarding our mental health efforts.
So that's just a random phone call?
Yeah, they use an algorithm to go through the phone numbers registered in Summit County and then kind of cold call them. And we appreciate those 800 plus individuals that took the time to complete the survey with our people over the phone.
Okay, and what kind of questions did you ask?
Everything related to mental health, really. What is their perception about access? What is their feeling about the challenges that we have experienced, the growth that we've seen in the program? Anything really that they may or even may not know about mental health resources in Summit County, and really getting a feel for are there barriers, perceived barriers? Are there equity issues? Are there access issues? Are there language issues? Those different things that we need to have information about so that we can be better moving forward. And the phone calls were done both in English and in Spanish with native speakers of the Spanish language. So hopefully it cultivated a sense of for those callers to be able to share what they were thinking and do so really just in full honesty.
Yeah. counties put a lot of resources towards mental health over the last few years. You've also hired a new provider in terms of the mental health provider that you've got. I mean, are you seeing changes? Are you seeing improvements?
Oh, absolutely. We've seen significant changes, not only in rates. I don't want to quote numbers directly, but one of the biggest areas of improvement that we've seen is around suicide prevention and some of the metrics that are used to measure that. Another big one is access for individuals. We went from a model where there was very few professionals available for individuals to access services, and now it's not perfect, and we're still a bit understaffed in that regard, or the model is a bit understaffed, especially among Spanish-speaking residents, but it's better. It's considerably better. And really, the first hurdle to get over with any type of health service, whether it's physical, mental, or emotional, is access. And I think that with the resources that have been dedicated and committed through the council, the focus in the health department to continue with mental health and mental well-being, that increase in access has paid dividends.
Yeah. Now, we have also in the last year lost the mental health resource Connect. Has that made a difference? I mean, or has that been picked up somewhere, kind of the services they were providing?
Sure. Anytime you lose a service provider, regardless of what that service is, in a community, there's always a loss. There's always a hole left. But Connect did a really good job of setting up an exit plan through the different local providers, through the different nonprofits, and their efforts through the Behavioral Health Executive Committee that Aaron Newman leads and a few people sit on. We've been able to fill that gap and really reallocate those resources to different groups to help pick up where we left off. And while we miss our friends at Connect, I think the community is still in a safe spot given all their efforts to help with that exit plan and then other partners in the community jumping in to help.
Okay, so you mentioned that the results will then help build a new strategic plan. That's a new strategic plan is made every 2 years?
Absolutely, yeah. And that has to do with some restrictions on funding that we receive. It has to do with expectations set by the Department of Health and Human Services. And I also think it's an indication of the dynamic and really the fluid nature of mental and behavioral health. And so to remain relevant, to remain up to speed, and especially given that this is what feedback we're receiving from the community, that plan is updated regularly to make sure that we're meeting all of those needs in the community.
All right, so how is this gonna help then build the community health assessment efforts that you're planning for this spring and summer?
Yeah, thanks, Leslie. We're really excited about the community health assessment, which is done by public health every 5 years. And we were due to have one shared with the community in 2020, and then we know what happened there when the world stopped for a brief moment. And so as we dive into the next stage of these assessments, we're going to tap into more of the traditional public health measures around physical health. And I realize the community is surveyed and assessed and questioned to death, and there's a bit of fatigue around that effort, but this is really an important effort where we have partnered with Intermountain and the Park City Hospital to leverage some of their surveys that they've completed. We'll leverage the work of Aaron Newman and his group to build capacity around our assessment on mental health. And then our epidemiologist, Nancy Porter, is leading the charge for a community health assessment. And part of that is going to include something that I'm really excited about, and that is the introduction of climate change and public health as part of the assessment. And the reason for that is we have not been shy about climate change and what that's going to do to public health in the next 20 years. And understanding that climate change and that the use of those words may stir emotions in people. We're not out to stop climate change, although we'd love to. We're really out to help people become more resilient and address the changes that we anticipate are going to happen based on these changes and make people more resilient for the future and prepared.
Well, what do you expect then? I mean, well, how do you think climate change will impact public health?
Well, for me, the two biggest indicators or things, challenges that we're going to face are around the environment and around food. And food scarcity is one of those issues that if we run short on water, our friends in the agricultural and ranching industries will have a really hard time producing the food, because that's where our food comes from. Those individuals, that industry is extremely important in all that we are and all that we do. And we can't forget about our friends in the ranching industry. The second is, I mentioned water scarcity, but when we have drier, hotter summers, the temperature increases, meaning the summers are longer. The water isn't readily available. And we, as we've learned in the past few months, extreme heat is actually more challenging for human health than extreme cold. And as we look at these summers and the temperatures we've experienced, that extreme heat leads to longer fire seasons. Longer fire seasons lead to poorer air quality. And regardless of where an individual stands on the issue of climate change, these are all things that we've experienced in our environment, especially here locally in Summit County, where we all have concerns on where the water is going to come from. What does the fire season look like? And when I think about this, I know more people now that are looking at the reservoir totals and the snow depths across the state, because they recognize how close we came just a few years ago to being short on water in the summer because our winters just weren't as wet.
All right. Are you continuing with that climate change speaker series? Do you have the next guest lined up?
Yeah, we do, actually. And this is going to be a unique take, and this is really the brainchild of staff that sit on our Climate Change and Public Health Planning Committee. And on May 14th in Camas and on May 20th at the Swanner facility, we're going to dive into climate change and use those individuals that attend these events and their professional opinions and really their local opinions to sit in focus groups and discuss how climate change should impact a community health assessment. We have a very involved, a very educated, and a very interested community in regards to these to this conversation. And so we're going to be a little selfish, and we're going to take advantage of those opinions and that information and use that to help drive our community health assessment and really set the stage and step back and listen to what our folks have to say. We are going to offer those both in English and in Spanish, so we want to hear from everybody in the community. And they're going to be led by people within the health department and really drive some critical conversations through questioning on what people are thinking.
So the dates are set for what?
May 14th at the Camas Community Center, and then May 20th at Swanner.
Okay.
Both of those will be held in the evenings after 5, and hopefully we can encourage a few people to come out and share with us what they're thinking about climate change.
Okay. Wellspring's with us later this month. You're already anticipating boil orders that we may need as we get into the spring months?
Yeah, I think every spring we see a boil order or two shape up or come out as spring runoff happens. And our environmental health team, led by Nate Brooks, is already working with our water companies, working with our cities to prepare them. Should a boil order happen, here's where the health department can help. Here's the health department's role. Here's the water provider's role, just to make sure that the process is smooth so that we protect public health, that we protect our communities, but more importantly, we get the problem resolved as soon as we can in a safe manner and get them back online. This isn't... it's more preparation than it is anything else. It's not fear-mongering or anything like that, but we just want people to know that we are actively working to improve on the boil order process, because we anticipate, as history has indicated, there's always one or two boil orders each year, and our staff, our lab, those on the field are working hard with our community partners to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Okay, you've also have some new health board members.
Yeah, it's excited about that. Alyssa Van Wee continues to be our chair, and County Council member Tanya Hansen is our County Council liaison. Dr. Alyssa Golding and Chris Cherniak were reappointed to the board. And then we were given two new board members, Michelle Downard, who will represent the North Summit area, and then Dr. Stephen Trapp will represent the Snyderville Basin area on our board, and those individuals will start April 1st.
All right. Now, you're also, again, moving ahead with that public health accreditation. How does the board play a role in that?
Yeah, we're excited about this opportunity to dive into the idea of public health accreditation. So on April 1st, which we're going to bring Dr. Stephen Trapp and Michelle into the fold full speed with a presentation by the Public Health Accreditation Board, who is attending our meeting on April 1st. And for an hour, we're going to learn about everything that's required to commit to the public health accreditation process. It's a long process. It's 18 to 24 months, depending on how long it takes you. The application process itself is 6 months long. But what it does is it offers us an opportunity to look internally through our staff to determine where we can improve, where our policies can improve. Are we considering things of equity, access, those types of issues that we're facing in public health, and how do we get better at them? How do we become accredited based on a national standard and find ourselves among the top health departments in the nation?
So you haven't done that accreditation to this point then, huh?
We have not, no. Summit County has not pursued this, but to be honest, if I look back over the last 5 to 10 years, it didn't fit with us, but now it does. We're on the backside of probably one of the more challenging things we'll ever experience in public health. The department has grown. The council has provided us additional opportunities with the sustainability department and behavioral health and substance use prevention being under the health department umbrella. So given these unique characteristics that we have within our department, it really does make sense to go after this at this time.
Okay. Also, measles are in the news, huh?
Yeah. It's one of those things where we're seeing a lot of media coverage, both globally and nationally, regarding measles. You know, we have 17 states in the nationally that have measles cases, and 45 cases in 2024. And while you may think 45 cases across, you know, the population of the United States, that's probably not too many. But considering that in 2000 it was considered eradicated and we did not have any cases to where we are now, you know, that increase or that spike, especially with some of the comments that have been made about Michigan being ripe for a measles outbreak, those are concerning for us in public health. And there is an element that is of concern to the community, as I feel that a few calls over the last few days.
So fewer people getting the vaccine, fewer children getting the vaccine, or is it that the vaccine's not working?
Yeah, there's really two indicators as to why we're seeing these increases in measles cases. And the first is that we are seeing a number of exemptions. And an exemption is a form that is completed by a parent or guardian that says that their child will not receive the vaccine. And according to a 2023 report done by the Utah Department of Health and Human Services, as a whole, the U.S. is at 91.4% vaccinated. Herd immunity is considered 92%. So we're right on that threshold. We're wavering, which is good. Unfortunately, in Summit County, we're at 85.3%. So we're, depending on which resource you look at, we're anywhere from 5 to 7% below that community immunity threshold that's been established. So those exemptions are a concern, but we also have seen a ripple effect from COVID, where during the COVID pandemic, there was nearly 40 million children that were either not vaccinated or are under vaccinated as a result of the priority being placed on COVID vaccines. And so the World Health Organization is watching this closely. You know, at the health department, we have access to the measles, mumps, and rubella or MMR vaccine, regardless of your financial situation. We have caring patient clinical providers that are willing to talk with families, get you in, provide those vaccinations to your children or to yourself, to the adults if they haven't been vaccinated. But really, we're trying to make it as easy as possible for, one, people to feel comfortable with the vaccination process, but two, feel comfortable with coming in, getting a vaccine, and doing what we can to protect our community.
Okay, and we should note, I mean, it's certainly not a celebration, but certainly a recognition 4 years ago this time, where we just had kind of going into the depths there of the pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. We're, it's very comforting to be where we are now, to be able to meet again and to have life as normal. And I know people have asked me, well, what's next? It was COVID, and then what's next? And measles isn't the next big thing, but measles is something that science has proven is 100% preventable, and we would encourage individuals to check with their primary care physician or, again, with the caring professionals at the Summit County Health Department in all three locations can answer any questions you have about the MMR vaccine.
Okay. Hey, Phil. See you next month. Thank you.
Thank you.
Studio now with an update from Park City Ski and Snowboard. I have Free Ski Division Director Hatch Haslock along with Snowboard Division Director Rick Champano. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Park City.
Yeah, Rick, let's just start with you. You've had some USA Snowboard and Free Ski events here at home.
We have. We're so happy to... We're back at Park City. We had a half pipe event and a slope style event. So to see those parks and pipes animated up there and see the local kids and some kids coming from out of town, it's just been great. And I want to give a shout out to Park City Mountain and the park crew up there because they keep things in such great shape. And man, we had a good time up there this weekend.
Yeah, it took a while to get the half pipe open, which is why you didn't have an event until just recently, huh?
Yeah, we were talking to Chucky, one of the park guys up there. And I mean, he said 3 weeks from when it opened, it was looking at a grassy field up there. And I think the snowmaking windows were really challenging this season. So we're so fortunate to have one. And it seems like half pipe's coming back in the U.S. There's a few mountains that have put them up this season that haven't put them up before. And we're so fortunate to have, now we have two in the valley, which is really great.
Yeah. And in terms of the local kids participating, how'd they do?
They rode great. You know, I was going to compile some stuff, but our crew is just all over the podium up there. And I think the big thing is they see that's the spark for the next couple contests, right? So they see like, oh, I could do this. I could, you know, go to the next step. And we were just recently on the road. We were in California for a couple snowy weeks in California. And and to see some of the national kids out there and see, you know, where we stack up against them, we're really poised for some good stuff in the future.
Yeah, so you traveled to Mammoth. What was the event there?
There's a Futures Tour, which is kind of a rung on the ladder to get to Rev Tours and then eventually to get to World Cups. You have to be 13. It's a FIS event. So our team's pretty young, but we're getting out there and we're mixing it up and, you know, kind of splitting the packs. We have a guy who comes down and trains with us from Jackson, Ellis Swain, and he was just off the podium in fourth place, and he doesn't get to ride much half pipe. So, again, it's just kind of that spark of how we're going to move forward into the future, and we're really optimistic about things.
Yeah, so you mentioned snowy. I mean, did you hit it during, like, the 12 feet of snow?
Yeah, it was wild. We were actually in North Star for an event, and then we knew we had to get to Mammoth. We knew we were going to get stuck somewhere. So we kind of got an extra night down in Mammoth and zipped down there and beat the storm, and then the mountain was closed for 2 days, and everyone asked us, we were, you know, kind of stuck in a condo, you know, plenty of food and everything, but you know, my mom was watching it on the news back east, and she's like, you're in the snowiest part of the world right now. And I'm like, well, it just so happens to work that way. But they pulled off the contest, which was amazing. It was a little windy out there, and everyone asked about the snow condition. The wind was so great, the snow wasn't even that good, so we didn't even ride a bunch of powder when we were out there.
Oh, God, that's too bad. Okay, anything else you wanted to mention?
You know, these regional contests, you know, when they're going on, we love to have the support up there. We love to have the community coming up, and we'll probably do a better job of blasting it out so people can come up. But obviously the parents of the Park City Ski and Snowboard Club are out there in force having a good old time. And man, when the weather's nice, it's pretty great to get up and watch some kids ride. So come on up.
Okay. Hatch, you've got some news about the Free Ski, the Park and Pipe, and Big Mountain teams?
You bet. Yeah, we had... I think exciting part of our team was out there, you know, with the snowboard team, battling the elements, all of the same things. But we managed to have two athletes that qualified for the Rev Tour from that Futures Tour. And we actually had a stop of the Futures Tour here in early February. So Park City Mountain hosted the half pipe, and Woodward hosted the the Slopestyle, and we lost a men's Slopestyle event due to weather because we had one of those overproducing storms, which seemed to be almost the average these days. So that was, we were really excited to get those at least one of those two competitions. We lost the North Star Slopestyle for the men as well, because that was the beginning of the storm, and luckily that crew just jumped in the car and literally raced down to get to Mammoth before everything was going to shut down. So, but yeah, it was pretty exciting. We had Zach Gaudet, and then also another local girl, similar, familiar last name in free ski, but Jacqueline Kanzler. She won the Mammoth event and got a third as well in North Star. So she got herself a rev tour, which is the sort of the NORAM for our racing athletes. It's that next level up, just below World Cup. Yeah, and then we had the same thing as Rick, you know, the podium was spattered with a lot of our athletes this weekend and throughout the year. And so we're looking at probably about 30 athletes on the free ski side that we expect to qualify for the USASA Nationals. That last weekend was the last qualifying event. And so they'll start rolling out those invites this week. And we're looking to do pretty well. Last year, our free ski team was the strongest in the country, so that was pretty cool. At the USASA Nationals, we had the most medals and everything. So, hopefully, we'll be able to repeat that.
Where are the Nationals going to be held this year?
At Copper. So they've been at Copper for a long time. It's kind of like a mainstay. I think they have a contract negotiation coming up soon, so I don't know if they'll stay there or not. But it's been a great central location for the country to come to. And so, you know, people are, it's easy, and they do a great job with their events over there too. So it's always a pleasure.
Okay, and then you also hosted an event just this weekend at Jupiter. Tell me about that.
Oh, that's the one coming up. So it's going to be a very busy week for Park City Ski and Snowboard, especially my side. So we have our fifth annual free ride competition, or also known as Big Mountain. But we're kind of in the process. IFSA, which is the governing body, has really rebranded to Free Ride, so we're moving in that direction. But it's the same competition. We've hosted it off of Jupiter Peak, all except for last year. Last year we got too much snow. We would have had like the best course. So much was available to ski last year in Jupiter, and we had a beautiful course set, and then of course it dumped and dumped and dumped. But We're excited to get back up there. The weather looks good, so we should be back on Jupiter Peak, and we are pretty excited about that. We have our athletes just finished one at Solitude last weekend, and we had a number of kids on the podium there. And usually at home in our home venue, we have a lot of our Park City Ski and Snowboard kids that end up on top of those podiums.
Okay, and then what's just the latest with the rest of the freestyle teams?
Sure. So freestyle, we got a lot going on. We just had the division championships this weekend. Deer Valley hosted it with Wasatch Freestyle, the other local freestyle team, and they did a great job over there. And one of our athletes, Jackson Crockett, won the men's singles, so that was pretty cool, regional champion. And then we had, too many kids to mention that got on podium, so a lot of fun action over there in Deer Valley.
Yeah, so are these kids going down that steep champion?
Yeah, they skied champion. They did lower the course start to the for this event to the top air, and then built another air bump in the middle. So, but it's still a challenging run. Speaking of challenging run, we opened our run at the UOP expansion there, the West Peak Spence Eccles Olympic Training Center. And it's called Axios, and we had a regional contest there to prepare for our junior nationals, which is coming up this week. And that first regional was our first real build on the hill, so we learned a lot of stuff, and that was very challenging, steep top section with a very challenging top air. So that was a good practice, but it was a learning experience for everybody, and it was definitely a very tough course. So we've now rebuilt that, and we're going to host the Junior National Championships this week in Aerials and Moguls. And the cool thing is they've started doing a, you know, kind of an age class, junior nationals, and with a smaller course for the younger kids. So the U15s will actually start essentially where the top air is, but we've got two side-by-side mogul courses up there. It looks amazing. So all those people that have been driving by wondering what's going on up there in that hill, take a look this weekend. We should be hopefully getting the rest of the fencing up today, and then we'll roll out the competition. Training will begin on Wednesday, with competition beginning on Thursday. So it'll be exciting, and if people want to come out and volunteer, we're looking for plenty of volunteers from the community as well.
Okay. I guess I should just note, too, we've got another month or so of training and competition, and then I saw that summer camp registration starts at the end of the month.
Yeah, so Ryan will have Divine's program, especially the youth development, will roll out, I think, the 29th of March, and then we'll try and roll out the freestyle, the free ski, snowboard stuff in the 15th. And I did want to mention one more thing, if I can. Leslie, we had one of our athletes, Zoe Dwinell, came back from an injury. She got hurt skiing, just hurt her knee with her family about a little over a year ago. And she came back this year and qualified for the Junior World Championships and got a podium at the NORAM Cup. So we're excited about that. She's a local girl, grew up here in Park City. And really happy for Zoe and excited for her to have this great opportunity.
So what event is that?
And she skis in moguls and in dual moguls. Her podium was in the dual mogul event.
Great. Yeah. All right, guys, thanks.
Yep, thank you.
In the studio now with an update from Park City Education Foundation, I have the new CEO, Ingrid Whitley, along with Vice President of Advancement, Jen Bello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
So, Ingrid, you've been on board for about a month now.
Yeah.
How's it going?
It's going really well. I'm just actually really loving it. The team's amazing, and I feel like I'm starting to get my feet underneath me. So it's been great, yeah.
Okay, so this month you wanted to talk about classroom grants.
Yes.
Talk a little bit what they are first.
Yeah, sure. So one of the ways that we support our educators in Park City School District is through funding classroom grants. This is our longest running program, which actually launched us into existence in 1986 with a single STEM grant for $2,000. And since that first grant, our donors have funded 880 grants and 250 express grants to educators. And these dollars are funneled just directly into classrooms in the district. They support really impactful programs like Latinos in Action, Mindfulness and Wellness, After School STEM, Before School, and lots of others. And last year, we actually funded 42 grants, which totaled more than $250,000 of support directly into classrooms. So I wanted to share just a couple of anecdotes, if I could, about a couple of them. So one is our Composer in Residence program, which happens at Park City High School. And it's grown from 16 students taking part only 3 years ago to 250 students this year participating in the String Thing. Is that right?
Yes, it's called the
String Thing. 6th through 12th grade concert in February. And so our Park City High School orchestra teacher, Eva Marble, shared with us a quote. She said, "Composing music with various ages and abilities in mind has allowed all participants to experience true art and not be limited by the abilities of our youngest musicians," which I think is just a really sweet anecdote from one of our teachers who experiences the rewards of the classroom grant program that we're able to fund. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, to go from 16 to 250, that's huge.
Yes.
I mean, are you still paying for it, or has the district now assumed some of the cost of that?
No, we pay for that. So what that covers is the cost of hiring the composer. So these are outside composers. Brett Hughes, who's the fine arts coordinator now, but he was a Park City Band's teacher previously. So he looks for composers out there and hires them, and they will write a piece specifically for Park City High. So it's never been played. And this year, when they decided to do it for the String Thing, which is 6th through 12th graders get all on one stage, that's a different challenge because there's the 6th graders that are just learning how to play the violin or the viola or the cello, all the way to 12th graders that, you know, maybe are going to college for music. And so they're learning a piece. It's been composed specifically for them. And in their good for their age range and their skill level. And then also the piece has never been heard. So that means the students and the teacher can interpret it themselves rather than, oh, you know, I've heard this piece, you know, a million times. And so unfortunately this year, the composer typically comes and conducts and does master classes. She got COVID right before the concert, but she might still try to come out this spring. But that's what the grant pays for, is for that composer.
Okay, so in terms of what you have for grants for this cycle then, how much money do you have?
So we're anticipating around that $250,000 level, $200,000 to $250,000. That is where Running With Ed comes in.
Before we get to that, yes. Then I mean, so these, yes, these classes or these grants would start, mm-hmm, this spring, or are they're for next school year?
So we do the selection process this spring. So teachers are applying right now for classroom grants that would kick into gear next school year. And we have a selection committee that reviews all the applications and makes decisions before the end of the school year. So teachers find out before they leave for the summer if they've been funded. And we'd love to fund as many as we possibly can, obviously. And so we're excited to review those applications this year. One other program I just wanted to shout out really quickly was the Park City High School's debate team. We support their funding as well. And they actually just won the state competition. So against 17 other schools, it was the first time, I think, in 8 years that the debate team has won. So
they head to nationals now?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah.
They will.
Awesome.
Yes, they will. So that's super exciting. This is a great debate state. There's a lot of excellent debate schools. And actually, it's fairly rare for a public high school to do so well in debate. A lot of times that is in the purview of private schools. So they've worked super hard over the years, and they will go to nationals and will help support that funding. We do have a donor that specifically supports travel for national competitions, which is wonderful.
Nice. All right, and then the grants. Are you still doing those kind of expedited grants? So that kind of happened, mm-hmm, during COVID, but you'll still do it now?
Yeah, absolutely. So that, you're right, that came about during COVID. We turned around, I think, 50 grants. You know, today's the anniversary of beginning the shutdown, right? So here in Park City, I think it was March 13th. And we started hearing from teachers almost immediately. So we funded in that spring, over a 6-week period, 50 grants for about $50,000. And we turned them around in 24 hours. What we heard from principals and teachers is that classroom grants are amazing and great for long-term planning, but to have some funding available for something that comes up last minute is really important. So we don't quite fund at the $50,000 level. We fund around $30,000. And we end up spending all of that by the end of the year for those last minute needed requests.
Okay, and then as you mentioned earlier, I mean, how these are paid for is the money that comes in through Running With Ed. Early registration still ongoing, or has that ended?
Nope, it is March 1st through the end of March. So that is a $25 discount. So the adult price is $100 during March, and then it will go up to $125. And that is ongoing right now. And so go ahead and register, save $25 per person. This year is the 15th anniversary of Running With Ed, which I just seems amazing to me. We're talking about how fast time goes in the waiting room. And we have a great t-shirt, commemorative t-shirt this year. So I know everyone loves that Running With Ed t-shirt. And this year it will have that 15th anniversary commemoration. We're working on the course. We're working on all kinds of fundraising prizes. HydroPack's going to have prizes. TGR is having the gravity. Now I'm blanking on their name. They're having
Teton
prizes.
Gravity Research.
Teton Gravity Research. Thank you.
Yeah.
Has prizes. There will be just a lot of great swag out there. And of course, it's so much fun. All the schools are already reaching out saying, okay, you know, can we have this theme for our exchange? They're planning great parties at every exchange. So people are excited and it goes fast. So register and get your costume and your name.
When's the date of Running With Ed?
It is May 18th.
Okay. Let's see. And then you have your own website, I think, for it, runningwithed.com.
Yes, runningwithed.com. So you can go on there and find out all the information and register. Teachers, by the way, don't have to pay, thanks to the Excellent Educator Program sponsored by the Doylney and Lewis families. So every Park City School District teacher gets to run for free. And then any teacher from any school in the state of Utah, it's only a $50 price for you. So we definitely give our educators a discount. But many thanks to Excellent Educator Program for covering the teachers to run in the race.
All right. Have you named those excellent educators for the year?
No, that's coming up on April 26th. So each school votes for the person in their building that they think best exemplifies an excellent educator. The voting just closed, so I can't wait to see who that is. But of course, it's a surprise. On April 26th, we'll go around to all the schools, surprise the educator. It's always such a great day. We encourage, you know, any parents or community to come along and see that. And that program was also started in 1996 by Jim Doylney in honor of his mother, who was a teacher. So every school nominates an excellent educator. And then also the Sarah and Stephen Doylney Award is also named. And that is the senior class votes for the most influential teacher of their entire career. So it could be any teacher in the district. It typically is a high school teacher, but there's always a nomination for a kindergarten teacher in there, which is so fun to see. And then everyone writes why they're nominating that particular teacher. And it's so meaningful to hear these quotes of how these teachers are changing students' lives. It really goes back to, you know, the research shows, and also anecdotally, that after parents, teachers are the number one influence on student success. So thanks to the Doylney and Lewis families, we can really honor all these teachers.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Excited for Running with Ed.
All right. Ingrid, Jen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, after heading up the Utah Avalanche Center for the past 7 years, Park City resident Chad Brocklesburg is stepping down, as well as Mark Staples, who has led the center's forecasting effort since 2015. The organization is now on the hunt for their replacements. Brocklesburg joined the Utah Avalanche Center as executive director in July of 2017 and says he's excited by the change, which will get him back outdoors more often.
After 7 years, I've made a difficult decision, but also a wonderful decision in some ways, to step down from my leadership role, hand over the reins to somebody else, and move into more of a community role. I'm excited next year to be teaching more classes, to be working with the community, hopefully spreading more word about avalanche safety, and then also leading some special projects.
He expects to remain with the organization full-time for the next 18 months to 2 years. During his tenure, he says the center has grown a lot. He's been able to expand the number of summer employees from 2 to 8. They've doubled the amount of programming that they do, with close to 30 on-snow classes every season, which trains some 500 students a year, and reaching as many as 10,000 people a year with the message of the Know Before You Go program. Brocklesburg has a master's degree in biology, and after spending some time in cancer research, he moved over to tech consulting, where he worked for 2 decades, traveling around the world before he found his dream job.
Really was looking for a change to where I could be part of the community and give back to the community I love and the organization that I loved, and so this was such a perfect job for me to be able to step into 7 years ago, and one of the reasons I can't really leave, I just have to change roles, is that it's been such an amazing organization to work with. The people are just phenomenal, and yeah, it's hard to imagine working with better people.
Another change is that the director of the Forest Service Utah Avalanche Center, Mark Staples, is also moving on back to Bozeman, where he came from, to take over the Gallatin National Forest Avalanche Center there. Staples has been with UAC since August 2015. Brocklesburg says that Staples' replacement will be made in the next few weeks. This person will oversee all of the forecasting efforts. The deadline to apply for Brocklesburg position ended last week. The successful candidate will have a strong background in communications, marketing, fundraising, and business operations. He says the center hopes to hire his replacement by June. He'll remain full-time through the Black Diamond fundraiser in September. KPCW News Time now, 8:59. Well, Girls on the Run is a nonprofit organization that provides after-school character development and empowerment for girls in 3rd through 8th grade. Volunteer coaches are now needed at a couple of schools this spring. Girls on the Run serves girls in both Summit and Wasatch counties. 5 schools participate in the Park City area. In Wasatch County, the program runs out of the Soldier Hollow Charter School. Next year, Program Director Ivy Denahan says they hope to offer a program at Midway Elementary as well. Volunteer coaches are still needed at McPullen Elementary, which will meet for 8 weeks on Monday and Wednesday afternoons, and at Jeremy Ranch, which meets Tuesday and Thursday afternoons. Denahan says the program isn't as much about running as it is about building confidence and inclusivity.
And what's so great about our program is that it is so inclusive of girls of all abilities, like athletic abilities. They do not have to be runners to do the program, but we're going to just take it really easy with the running at the beginning of the season, but it does increase throughout the 8 weeks, and it's just teaching them, you know, no matter what their background is, where they're from, what their athletic ability is, that they can set this goal of finishing a 5K and doing it confidently.
She says they're looking for women who are committed and will show up. A required in-person training session is set for this Saturday, March 16th in Salt Lake. Registration for the program is ongoing. The season runs from April 1st to June 1st.